Hello, and welcome to Such a Fun Read, a podcast where we come together to read a book and chat about it like a book club. I am your host and resident reader, Cherie, and I'm really excited to dive in and continue our discussion about the book we are currently reading, A Discovery of Witches by Deborah Harkness. We'll be getting into the characters, the story, the lore, and unraveling how this series all begins. This is not a spoiler-free podcast, but we will not be discussing anything that happens in future books in the series, and we will only be discussing what we've read so far. We'll start out with the manuscript section. There we will talk about what just happened, what we just read, and we will go chapter by chapter. Then we will go to the congregation section. Here we will talk about the things that stood out in the chapters, things we learned about, and things we might think will be important for later. Then we'll have our History 101 section. Here we'll discuss a few of the historical figures, events, and other things that might show up in this story. And finally, we will have a rapid fire section. I'm actually going to switch a couple things around starting this episode. In this section, we'll go over three things I'm looking forward to, the moments that have intrigued me about what could happen in the future, two characters that I want to talk about and what we've learned about them so far, and one favorite quote. I'll pick a favorite quote from these chapters. And for this episode, we are discussing chapters 17 through 22. So whether you're a diehard fan of this series or discovering it for the very first time, there is something here for all of us to enjoy and explore together. And if you are enjoying these deep dives into the world of All Souls, please share with your friends. If you know someone that loves this series or could love this series, go ahead and share these episodes with them, and then we can all enjoy this series together. Now, with that all being said, let's go ahead and get into the manuscript section and talk about what happened in these chapters. We start with chapter 17. Diana woke up after sleeping from 6 p.m. the night before. It was now 1 p.m. She was definitely tired. She then remembered that Matthew gave her a sedative and didn't like that. He brushed her comment off about how she didn't like taking drugs as well. She then thought about the events that happened the day before and thought about Knox saying, "Remember who you are," and then thought about the note attached to her parents' photo that said, "Remember." This scares her and makes her want to take comfort in Matthew, and she ends up sleeping some more. She then woke again, and all she could think about was how she'll be killed like her parents were, because the magic found her and the witches did too. She was going to run, but Matthew got between her and the door. He said that they were going to face it or else she'll never stop running. That didn't calm her down though, and then suddenly there was a breeze that turned into gusts of wind. Once Diana calmed down, she wondered what was happening to her. Matthew told her that what just happened was witch wind. This type of magic seemed to be rare in those days. They then moved on from that moment, and Matthew made Diana some tea. They then start to talk about what was happening. Matthew wanted to understand why Knox thought she broke the spell on Ashmole 782. Diana went over the conversation she had with Knox about it and how Knox said she must have been lucky to break it. Matthew mentioned how a talented witch bound Ashmole 782 and thought the spell might be impossible to break. Diana was the first one that met the book's conditions, and Matthew is curious why. Then Diana used magic again. She was putting puzzle pieces together on a white table. Knox, the manuscript, her parents, etc. Matthew then noticed her doing this magic because she was shimmering. Diana said that it is what she did when she couldn't solve a puzzle. Matthew believed that Diana used her magic without thinking, and before with her witch wind, the powerful emotion she was having was keeping her thoughts at bay. Then Matthew brought up wanting to take her home. At first, Diana said she wasn't going back to America, and then Matthew said not that home, his home. Diana thought he meant the old lodge, but then Matthew came clean and told her that he meant his home in France, Septor. and it would be safer there as Nox and the other witches will find out about her not using witchcraft to get Ashmole 782 and how it seemed the spell was set to open for her, and they wouldn't be able to get to her if she was at Septor. Then Aunt Sarah and Em called. Diana finally answered, but she tried to play things off like everything was fine. Matthew then took the phone from Diana and told her aunts that she had been threatened by witches and that one of them was Peter Nox. That was not something Sarah liked hearing. She said that Diana's father didn't like Peter Nox and how Stephen was very easygoing. It took a lot for him to not like someone, and he seemed to have detested Peter. Matthew then told her aunts that he was taking Diana to France and gave them two phone numbers, his cell and the home phone. He told them they can call anytime. After the phone call, Diana mentioned how there was an alchemy conference in less than 6 weeks, and she was expected to deliver the opening lecture, so she needed to be near the Bodleian Library to get her information. Diana, your life is at stake here. I think there are more important things than that conference, but that is just me. She continued saying how she needed access to the Bodleian, and then Matthew brought up a book he owned, his 14th century copy of Aurora Consurgens. Diana then agreed to go to France after learning about him having this book. Matthew found it funny that Diana won't go for her own safety, but will go for this book. I find it funny as well. Diana said that she's never been known for her common sense. They then take a plane to France, and as they drive up to Septor, Diana noticed how sprawling it was. Chapter 18. Isabeau, Matthew's mother, was waiting at the door as they walked up to the home, and Matthew introduced them after they entered. Isabeau said that she did not like the way witches smelled. Matthew didn't like that and said something to her in French. Isabeau then extended her hand to Diana and said something to her in Old French. Matthew translated it to Diana, and Isabeau made a comment on how warmbloods are so poorly educated. We then meet Marta, Isabeau's housekeeper. Matthew introduced her to Diana, and she was warmer with her welcome. Marta made a comment that Diana was a powerful witch after she smelled her. They then had a conversation about food for Diana, which seemed to annoy Matthew a bit. Matthew then asked Marta if she would bring Diana some food. She took a moment looking between Matthew and Isabeau, like she was trying to decide whose side she would be on, before answering that she would. Before they left to go get settled in, Diana saw that Marta said something to Isabeau that made her snort. When she asked Matthew what Marta said, his response was, "She said we looked well together." Matthew also mentioned that Isabeau's bark is worse than her bite. On their way to get settled, Diana saw a room where she was certain it was a library. She asked Matthew if she could see his copy of the book he mentioned earlier, and he said that she needed to eat and rest first. He then offered to carry her up the stairs since it would be a long climb, and she said he would not sling her over his shoulder like a victorious medieval knight. Matthew laughed at that. We see Matthew's rooms, and they are in the chateau's graceful round tower. Diana then asked if the people in the village knew about him, and he said yes. He said that vampires were safer when they were part of a community that knows who they are and didn't ask too many questions. She then thanked him for bringing her to Septor. Matthew then jokingly said to Diana that she looked so alive and she should be with a man much younger. They were about to kiss but were interrupted by Marta bringing a tray of food. After Diana began eating her meal and drinking her tea, Marta noticed she was cold and began setting a fire in the fireplace, but not before giving Matthew a dirty look because he hadn't done that for Diana himself. Marta then said that Diana must sleep because she could smell that Diana had been afraid. Could you imagine being around others who could smell your emotions? Diana finally went to sleep after eating her meal, and when she woke up, she took her shower, and then there was tea for her when she was finished. And she asked Matthew when she could see the Aurora manuscript. He responded saying she could see it when he was sure she wouldn't get lost. He then offered to take her on a grand tour. During the tour, they ended up in a library, and Diana was too curious about the Aurora manuscript and asked again where it was. Matthew went to the shelves and grabbed it. He handed it to Diana, and she looked for a velveteen cradle to put it on. She wasn't used to holding these type of books without extreme care. Matthew then laughed and told her to just open it. Diana then said that she didn't know how she would cite the book. It was an unknown copy of the manuscript with illuminations by a woman. And Matthew said that he would loan the manuscript to the Benaic Library for a year. Anonymously, of course. They continued their tour, and Diana found herself excited when they came across the stables. Matthew was nervous with Diana being too close to one of the horses, but Diana thought she was fine. He ended up quoting Giordano Bruno, and he was surprised that Diana knew who he was referencing. Diana seemed to keep surprising Matthew because he discovered that she rode as well. She grew up in the country and has been riding horses since she was a child. And after the stables, they continued the tour until Diana got tired. She ended up taking another nap and had a dream of riding in a dark forest. She had arrows settled against her shoulder and one arrow set to a bow. She had pursuers but did not feel afraid. She told the horse to fly and it obeyed. Chapter 19. Diana woke the next morning, deciding that she needed to go for a ride. Matthew at first told her that he would take her riding in the afternoon, but then he was swayed to take her right then. But before Diana would eat breakfast, they were in the kitchens instead of the dining room. Diana had dressed for riding in leggings. It seems as if Matthew knew she would want to go riding and ended up getting her clothing for it. They went to the stables and went for their ride. While they were out, Diana asked Matthew why Isbo hated witches so much. And Matthew said that Isbo was jealous. She was jealous of a witch's power, ability to see the future, ability to bear children, and pass that power to a generation, as well as the ease at which they can die. Diana ended up using her magic again. She silently told her horse to fly and the horse shot forward. She told the horse to fly again and it speeded up. Matthew then mentioned to Diana that he noticed she had her eyes closed while riding, and she also rode with her eyes closed and walked with them closed too. He wasn't happy with her decision to use her magic while riding the horse because she doesn't understand her magic yet. After they went for their ride, Matthew decided it was time to show her the DNA report that Marcus gave him when they were in her rooms. He went over what the report said. Diana was a powerful witch and they didn't know just how powerful. Chapter 20. After lunch, Diana and Matthew head straight to Matthew's study. It's time to study and start examining Aurora Consurgent. While she's looking over the manuscript, she thinks she might need a Bible. She asked Matthew if he had one and he said he did, but he wasn't sure where it was. Diana decided to look through the shelves to see if she could find it. She found what she could. She found Gutenberg's Bible and also a book labeled Will's Plays. Diana wondered if these books were given to him from his friends, and Matthew said most of them were. She continued to look through the books and then she found the first edition of Darwin's On the Origin of Species. She pulled the book off the shelf, but first sneaking a glance at Matthew to make sure he wasn't watching her. I really don't think Matthew would have cared, but who knows. She opened it and found a letter inside written from Darwin to Matthew. She found that there were 3 chapters annotated more heavily than the rest. Then she moved closer to the fire and curled up on the sofa with the book and continued to look through it. She wanted the book to help her make more sense of Matthew based on the notes he had made in the book. There was a moment where Diana looked up from the book and she was watching Matthew. And then she noticed him yawning. She had not seen him yawn before. She turned back to the book, but the next thing she knew, she was waking up covered with a blanket. And the book was on the floor near her with a bookmark so she didn't lose her place. Next, she and Matthew shared some wine and they talked about Darwin's book and some of the notes that he took in it. In regards to those notes, Matthew had different thoughts now than he did then. Then it was time to join Isabel and Marta for dinner. After dinner, they relaxed in the salon. Marta made Diana some tea that she made and she told Diana that she would teach her how to make it. Then Matthew and Isabel danced. It was a dance not familiar to Diana. She asked what type of dance it was. Matthew answered that it started out as a tarantula, then elements of the volta, then finished with a minuet. Then Matthew told Diana it was her turn. She tried to decline, but Matthew was persistent. Diana does end up dancing, and there is a moment during that Isbo said Matthew's name. He said, "I know." They continued to dance, and when it was over, Matthew wanted Diana to open her eyes. She first noticed that she was closer to Matthew's face than normal, and then she looked down at her feet and her toes were dangling. She was using air to hold herself up. She was floating. Afterward, there was an argument between Matthew and Isabeau on how Diana should use her power. Diana interrupted them and said that she will decide when and how her power should be used, but then agreed with Isabeau, saying that it can't be ignored any longer. Then they sat by the fire until the logs burned down. After they all said goodnight, Matthew walked with Diana back to his rooms. Diana at first said that she might read for a bit, but then Matthew became romantic with her. He wondered what spell she put on him. He then kissed her. Diana wanted him to come to bed with her, but he said he would come up for a bit, but not stay. Well, he said not yet. He told her they had time. She had only known him for a few weeks, and there was no need to rush. He kissed her again, then while she was in bed, he sang to her a song that his father wrote for Isabeau. Chapter 21. It is the next morning, and Diana is greeted with a breakfast tray. After Diana eats and gets ready, she heads down to Matthew's study to continue her reading. Matthew had placed a Bible next to the manuscript she was reading that he found. He also mentioned how he knew the Bible backwards and forwards, so she could have asked him, and she said that she refused to use him as a reference material. After reading through the manuscript, she started to reach for the Bible. Matthew called out the verses she needed: Mark 16, Psalms 55, and Deuteronomy 32, verse 40. He said that her lips were moving as she was reading, so he knew what she would need. She continued reading with her lips closed this time. She needed the verse about the morning star, though, and asked Matthew where it was. He said, Revelation 2, verse 28. After a few hours, they walked through the gardens chatting. There ended up being a visitor. A man in black stood outside the gate. It was Domenico Michele. Matthew moved in front of Diana. He talked with Domenico and wanted Diana to go. Before she could leave, Isabeau showed up, wondering why Domenico was at her home. Matthew said that Diana doesn't have the book, and Domenico said that wasn't why he was there. He had come from the congregation. He was there because of the covenant. He mentioned how it clearly forbids any liaison between a vampire and a witch. This surprised Diana. Then Domenico told her that she must leave that place and no longer associate with Matthew, or the congregation will take whatever steps necessary to preserve the covenant. Matthew then told Isabeau to get Diana out of there, and she did. Isabeau ended up raising a few banners. It was their family's emblem. It was also a warning to the village to be on guard. Diana then wondered about the congregation Isabeau told her. Diana then realized that the covenant could be the reason why Matthew didn't join her in bed the night before. She told Isabeau that her son needed to stop keeping secrets from her. And Isabeau told Diana that she has a great deal to learn about vampires, and that this was not a game. She then pleaded with Diana to tell Matthew that she refused to break the covenant. She was worried about her son. Marta then told her that Matthew was done talking with Domenico, and when they went to the edge of the tower, they saw a black horse and a rider streaking out of the stables and into the forest. Chapter 22. Diana, Isabeau, and Marta waited for Matthew to return. It was now late morning. Diana was given more food, but she couldn't really eat much after what just happened. Matthew finally returned, but when he didn't have that comforting familiarity that was there before for Diana. Then Diana started to see visions. A vision of her child coming home, Sarah in the late afternoon light, and Matthew saying, "I'm through," as he threw a black tunic with a silver cross at the front of someone's feet and strode away. Then Sarah called to see what was wrong. She knew something was wrong. Diana brought up how she wasn't told about the covenant or the congregation. And Sarah defended herself. She said that Diana turned her back on her power and refused to talk about magic. When would she have told her? Diana then said that she needed to talk to Matthew and she would talk to her aunt later, and hung up. Matthew said that they would not be breaking the covenant and will be abiding by the rules of the congregation. They were going to stay at Septor for a few more days and then return to Oxford. Diana didn't understand why Matthew was giving in. She then had another vision. This time it was her Aunt Sarah crying. Diana was with her in the kitchen, and then M came in as well, and she could see that she was crying too. Diana asked what was wrong. Then the vision turned to Isabeau and Matthew. Isabeau was telling Matthew that witches had his father. Now we're back to present and out of Diana's vision. And then Matthew gets overdramatic and he said that he would kill her before he let anyone hurt her. Okay, Matthew, calm down. Just calm down. Then Matthew decided to start talking about how dangerous vampires are. He's kind of being erratic right now. He is definitely all over the place. Diana said that he wouldn't hurt her and that she knew that he's killed humans before. Matthew then responded to that, saying that knowing and understanding what that meant were two different things, and she had no idea what he was capable of. Then he proceeded to try to scare her, but Diana wasn't falling for it, and she had another vision. It was her Aunt Sarah telling her about her parents' death. Then Matthew noticed that she was being different and asked her what was going on. His concern for her came back. Her vision continued and she was reaching for a bow. Matthew still tried to talk to her and Isabeau told him to stop because she was not in this world. Then a voice told Diana to be careful. She started to tell Matthew it was too late for that and he was confused what she meant. Then she told him that she had fallen in love with him. Matthew tried to brush it off and said it was too soon. Diana told him that witches fall in love quickly. Her mother fell in love with her father the moment she saw him, and she had loved him since she decided not to hit him with an oar after rowing. Matthew continued to dismiss her and said she didn't understand what the congregation would do. She wouldn't be safe and neither would her family. Diana said that she wasn't going to stop loving him. Then Matthew got a phone call. Someone seemed to have broken into his labs. He was now going to go back to Oxford. Diana mentioned how she would go pack her things, but Matthew said she wasn't going. This confused Diana, since Matthew just said they were returning to Oxford. After some more back and forth, Diana shut down and agreed to stay. Before Matthew left, he said that he would make a deal with Peter Knox. He would stay away from Diana and Ashmole 782 if Peter would do the same. Diana thought that it wouldn't be a good idea to make that deal because Peter would never adhere to it. He didn't have all the time that Matthew had. But Matthew wasn't listening. He was too focused on doing whatever it took to keep Diana safe. Diana wanted Matthew to tell her how he felt about her. And he answered saying that she knew how he felt. Not sure if that annoyed Diana or me more. Sometimes people just want to hear it. Is that so bad? And the chapter ends with Matthew leaving and Diana crying. And then she discovered witch water. Let's move on to the congregation section, where we will talk about the things that stood out in the chapters. Diana summoning Witchwind. I don't think I added to the Diana's magic use count in the last episode, but we do need to add it from then. Before these chapters, she's used magic that we know of 7 times that year. The 3 times before the story began, and then her time with Ashmole 782, when she got the journal off the shelf, when she spoke back to Peter Knox in his mind, and when her fingers began to shoot out little arcs of fire. Actually, her having fire fingers happened twice. So I guess she has used magic 8 times that year before these chapters. Now we can add Diana summoning Witchwind. She was able to do this when she was in her rooms with Matthew. The air began to stir around me as if trying to drive off the feeling of being trapped. Chilly wisps edged up the legs of my trousers. The air crept up my body, lifting the hair around my face in a gentle breeze. Matthew swore and stepped toward me, his arms outstretched. The breeze increased into gusts of wind that ruffled the bedclothes and the curtains. Earlier, we learned that a doctor had mentioned to Diana when she was younger that her body seemed to think it was in a constant state of danger. And in this moment for Diana, she was thinking about how she was going to be killed like her parents because of magic. She was freaking out, and when Matthew got between her and the door, which didn't allow for her to flee, her body went into action. This was the first time she had used or even heard the term witchwind before. She knew about a witch in Albany that was able to summon storms, but she had never heard it called witchwind. Matthew started to explain it to her. He mentioned how some witches inherited the ability to control the elements of air, and Diana seemed to be one of them. Speaking of the elements that are able to be controlled by witches, let's talk about Diana's DNA report. After they settled in a bit at Septor, Matthew showed Diana her DNA report. He first told Diana about the markers Marcus and Miriam were able to recognize. She had genetic markers for things like precognition, flight, one that helps witches find things that are lost, one for talking with the dead, transmogrification, telekinesis, spell casting, charms, curses, mind reading, telepathy, empathy. Those are quite a few genetic markers for one witch. And Matthew said that all the powers may never manifest, but Diana had inherited the predisposition for them. Now on to the elements, the elemental markers. These markers are earth, air, fire, and water. We already know that Diana can summon witchwind, so she has the air elemental marker. Apparently, earth is the genetic marker present in almost all witches, and Diana is one of them. Now, some witches have either earth and air or earth and fire. Diana has all three. Matthew has never seen a witch have all three before. How about all four, Matthew? Because when we leave off with these chapters in this episode, Diana is talking about witch water. I guess we'll talk more about that next week. Continuing on our discussion with Diana and magic, Diana is able to float now. There is a moment after dinner at Septor where Diana and Matthew are dancing and Matthew tells her to relax. And when she finally did, they continued to dance, and then when the dance was over, she opened her eyes. She had them closed, and when she looked down, she noticed she was floating. She was using her air marker without noticing. Her magic just keeps showing up. There was a conversation that Matthew and Diana had where he thought that Diana used her magic without thinking, and it seems to be true. Another thing that happens in these chapters is that we get to meet someone new outside of Isabeau and Marta. We met Domenico Michel. He is a vampire from the congregation. So we've met Peter Knox, who has one of the witch seats in the congregation, and now Domenico, who holds a vampire seat. He's at Septor to discuss the covenant. It seems Peter Knox must have gone running to the congregation when Diana wasn't around the library for him to harass. Domenico mentions the covenant and that it is forbidden for there to be any liaison between a vampire and a witch. We know that all creatures, past and future, vampires, witches, demons alike, entered into a pact to adhere to the rules of conduct set forth by the congregation. And one of those rules was forbidding mixing between creatures. They were strongly discouraged to socialize with other creatures and forbidden to fall in love and marry. Domenico is here to remind Matthew of that, and this is the first time Diana is learning about it. Matthew hadn't told her, and her aunts never told her either. She did end up bringing this up when she was speaking with her aunt Sarah, being very upset that she was never told. But her aunt defends her actions by saying that Diana never wanted anything to do with her magic, so Sarah didn't see the need in telling her about the congregation and their rules. I mean, I get where Sarah is coming from. If Diana is staying away from her own magic, I would also think that she would stay away from other creatures and not fall in love with a vampire. Earlier, Matthew was speaking with Marcus about the covenant like it was nothing, but now it doesn't seem to be something that can be brushed off. Both Matthew and Isabeau seemed worried with Domenico showing up. Isabeau explained the congregation and covenant to Diana after Diana's inquiry about it. A council of nine, three from each order of demons, witches, and vampires. It was established during the Crusades to keep us from being exposed to the humans. We were careless and became too involved in their politics and other forms, or insanity. Ambition, pride, and grasping creatures like Michelle, who were never content with their Latin life and always wanted more, they drove us to the Covenant. Isabeau also tried to plead with Diana to let Matthew go. She was worried for Matthew's safety. He is her son, after all, and she's already lost her husband, Philippe, and daughter, Louisa. She told Diana that she had the power to send him away. Another thing that happens in these chapters is Diana having visions. They happened when Matthew was trying to push her away after his conversation with Domenico. When Diana and Isabeau left Matthew while Domenico was there, Matthew stayed and he continued to talk with Domenico. We don't know exactly what was said between them, but Matthew definitely seemed different when he came back. And as Matthew was pushing Diana away, mentioning how they wouldn't break the covenant, she started to have visions. There were different visions, but they did seem to intertwine together. The first vision. Nothing but the color red appeared at first. Then the red took on a texture. Strands of red burnished here and there with gold and silver. The texture became a thing, hair, Sarah's hair. My fingers caught the strap of a backpack from my shoulder, and I dropped my lunchbox on the floor of the family room with the same officious clatter as my father when he dropped his briefcase by the door. I'm home, my child's voice was high and bright. Are there cookies? Sarah's head turned red and orange, catching sparks in the late afternoon light. But her face was pure white. The white overwhelmed the other colors, became silver, and assumed a texture like the scales of a fish. Chainmail clung to a familiar muscular body. Matthew. I'm through. His white hands tore at a black tunic, with a silver cross on the front, rending it at the shoulders. He flung it at someone's feet, turned, and strode away. Vision 2. The pool became a drop, the drop a tear glistening on a white cheek. Sarah's cheeks were covered in tears, her eyes red and swollen. Em was in the kitchen. When she joined us, it was evident that she'd been crying too. She looked devastated. What? I said, fear gripping my stomach. What's happened? Sarah wiped at her eyes, her fingers stained with the herbs and spices she used in her spell casting. Her fingers grew longer, the stains dissolving. What? Matthew said, his eyes wild, white fingers brushing a tiny blood-stained tear from an equally white cheek. What's happened? Witches. They have your father, Isabeau said, her voice breaking. Vision 3. Swirl of colors too many to distinguish moved before my eyes. They were leaves dancing against the sky, green, brown, blue, gold. It's your mom and dad, Sarah was explaining, her voice tight. They've been killed. They're gone, honey. The swirl of colors captured my attention again. Green, brown, blue, gold. They were leaves, caught in an eddy on a pool of water, falling onto the ground around my hands. A bow curved and polished rested next to a scattering of arrows and a half-empty quiver. I reached for the bow and felt the taut string cut into my flesh. He's yours. You mustn't let him go. Be careful. Another thing that happens in these chapters is that we leave Oxford and head to France. We are off to Matthew's home, Septour. Diana was even taken aback when she saw the place. In the center of Rolling Hills was a flattened peak dominated by a crenellated hulk of buff and rose stone. Seven smaller towers surrounded it, and a turreted gatehouse stood guard in front. This was not a pretty fairy tale castle made for moonlit balls. Septor was a fortress. It was also a place of refuge, history, and secrets for Matthew and his family. Matthew was very comfortable here. I mean, Diana noticed him yawning, and since when does a vampire yawn? The villagers in the village near Septor were also aware of what Matthew and his family were, and they didn't seem to mind. Matthew also said that vampires were safer when they were part of a community that knew who they were and didn't have too many questions. So with a vampire being able to yawn while they're there, it does seem like it is a safe space. Well, I guess until Domenico got there. But at least with Domenico, he was still outside of the gate. So no one has been able to get in that isn't a part of this family. Let's move on to History 101, where we'll briefly discuss a few of the historical figures, events, and other things that might have shown up in this story. Aurora Consurgens. So this is the manuscript that convinced Diana to go to France with Matthew. It was a manuscript about the opposing forces of alchemical transformation, silver and gold, female and male, dark and light. The earliest known copy was from the 1400s, and it was sometimes attributed to Thomas Aquinas, and it often contained a series of 38 fine watercolor drawings. Borgo Le Noir. She did the illustrations in Matthew's copy of Aurora Consurgens. She was the daughter of the famous 14th century illuminator Jean Le Noir, and she lived and worked with her father in Paris. I believe she didn't get a lot of recognition for the things that she did at the time because she was a woman, but we do know now. Johann Vermeer. He was mentioned when they were in Matthew's room in Septor. Diana saw an unknown painting by him that was propped up on a bookshelf, and the subject of that painting seemed to look a lot like Matthew. Vermeer was a Dutch painter and art dealer of the 17th century. He specialized in domestic interior scenes of middle-class life. He wasn't widely recognized during his lifetime, but his reputation has grown in the centuries following his death. He is now known as one of the greatest painters of the Dutch Golden Age. The Middle Ages. This time period was mentioned while in Matthew's Tower, as well as discussion about when the Covenant was created and accepted. This is the period in European history from the collapse of the Roman civilization in the 5th century CE to the period of the Renaissance around the 15th century. The era saw the rise and fall of powerful kingdoms and empires, such as the Carolingian Empire and the Holy Roman Empire. It was also a time of significant cultural and intellectual advancement. There were notable achievements in art, architecture, literature, and philosophy. The Occitan language. This language is referred to as the Old Tongue. Both Isabeau and Marta spoke it. I believe Isabeau was speaking it to point out that Diana wasn't one of them. This was a Romance language native to France, Spain, Italy, and Monaco. It has a rich literary tradition dating back to the Middle Ages, with troubadour poetry being one of its most renowned cultural contributions. It was understood and celebrated throughout most of educated Europe. It also faced pressure from the dominance of French, particularly in the wake of the French Revolution, when diversity of language was considered a threat. The troubadours. They were mentioned with Diana and Matthew's discussion on the Occitan language. Diana wondered if that was the language of the troubadours. The troubadours were poets and musicians who flourished in the Occitan-speaking regions of southern France during the High Middle Ages, roughly from the 11th to the 13th centuries. Their impact on medieval poetry was unprecedented. Their poetry covered a wide range of themes, including love, romance, politics, religion, and satire. Mariage Frères. This is a tea that Diana drinks in her rooms in Oxford as well as Septor. The one in the black bag with the gold label. That is what Diana told Matthew when he asked what tea preference she had after offering to make her some. Founded in 1854, this tea is a renowned French gourmet tea company recognized for its high-quality premium teas and exquisite blends. I had to look up this tea because I want to try it. I haven't done so as of yet, but I will, and I will get back to you all. We'll now move on to the rapid fire section. As I said earlier, I'm going to be changing some things around in this section. Instead of three characters, we will discuss two. And instead of two things I'm looking forward to, we will discuss three. So in this section, we'll go over three things I'm looking forward to, the moments that have intrigued me about what could happen in the future, two characters I want to talk about and what we've learned about them so far, and one favorite quote. I'll pick a favorite quote from these chapters. We will start off with the three things I'm looking forward to. The lab break-in. Someone broke into Matthew's lab, and that must not have been easy. When Diana went to Matthew's lab for the first time, she noticed how much security there was to get through. So who was able to get through that security? Was it witches? Was it another vampire? And what did they want or take? Matthew and Domenico's conversation. We know that Matthew and Domenico continued on with their conversation after Isabel and Diana went back into the home. What was said? When Matthew returned, he seemed easily swayed that they wouldn't break the covenant, and how he wanted to make a deal with Peter Knox to leave both the book and Diana alone. What did Domenico say to him? And will we learn about it in the next few chapters? Or will we have to wait? Diana and magic. What other powers will Diana use? We've seen her use witch wind, witch fire, and at the end of these chapters, it seemed like she was using witch water. We've seen her be able to speak to Peter Knox through his mind and her visions, plus the genetic markers she seemed to have. What else will she do, and why do they seem to just now be creeping up? Let's now go to the two characters I want to talk about and what we've learned about them so far. First up, Isabel de Clermont. So we have Isabel. She is Matthew's mother, vampire mother. She was made into a vampire, but not by her own terms. The date she was turned is unknown. Her maker wanted her for his wife, and he just decided to take her and make her a vampire. Before she was turned, she had a reputation as a seer, and she was still young enough to have children. Both of those abilities were gone once she became a vampire. She loves Matthew very much and seemed to tolerate Diana while at Septor for Matthew's sake. Also, Isabel seemed to be another woman in Diana's life, telling her to accept her responsibilities, just like Sarah and Miriam have. Next up, we have Marta. She is a vampire, Isabel's housekeeper and closest friend. The date she was turned is also unknown. We also do not know her last name. It is not mentioned. She is very loyal to Isabel and Matthew. She had a warmer nature toward Diana than Isabel. She's also caring. We see her wanting to always make sure that Diana is fed and comfortable. And now on to my favorite quote. So my favorite quote for this episode happened during the Septor Grand Tour. It was when Matthew took Diana to the library. Matthew said, "Imagine what you'd have if you'd been buying books for centuries. I'm just thinking about all the books I own and how many I would have after 1,500 years. We know that Matthew is 1,400 plus years old. We don't know the age of Isabeau or Philippe, but they are definitely older than Matthew. And if they've been collecting books for so long, I can't even imagine. Also, Matthew had other siblings, so their books would be there as well. There would be so many books at Septor. Now, I, of course, would not allow a vampire to turn me. I act like I would have an option if there was a vampire standing in front of me trying to turn me. But that's beside the point. I would not let them turn me. But if they were to say, imagine all the books you could read, there might be some hesitation. And then prayer afterward, because those are a lot of books. All right, folks, that brings us to the end of this episode discussing A Discovery of Witches. We tackled chapters 17 through 22. We met more of Matthew's family, and Diana is trying to deal with her magical abilities. And if you're enjoying these deep dives into the world of All Souls, please share with your friends. If you know someone that loves this series or could love this series, go ahead and share these episodes with them, and then we can all enjoy this series together. Until next time, happy reading!